The band's, a lot of people think the band is relatively new on the scene. I mean, but you guys have been rocking out for a while. I mean, you got your whole journey in your mom's minivan and whatnot. You've kind of, you know, paid your dues. How does it feel to start to see all this, you know, begin to come together with this tour?
Man, you know, you've done your research, how's that? it's very empowering feeling, man. It's really, when we look back at where we've come from, you know, to where we are now, and, you know, to be playing in towns that we've never played in before and having entire audiences sing back, you know, lyrics and know the songs and like yourself, know the story and the journey that, you know, my brother and I have been on, you know, trying to get this band off the ground. It's very surreal, man. And it's sometimes hard to really process that it's actually happening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So our biggest thing is we want to make our mom and dad proud, and we want to do right by them. So it's man. So far, so good, dude. And we're hoping we can keep the momentum growing.
Do you guys plan on, you know, giving mom a new minivan anytime soon?
That is actually in the works, man. That's part of the 5-year plan, man.
So, nice.
So we're gonna get our minivan with like gold rims and like DVD player, plush leather seats or something.
Very nice. Oh, let's discuss your voice a little bit. I mean, the first time I heard the album, it's like you always want to say, oh, this guy sounds like that, or this band sounds like this, but it's really hard to kind of put, you know, a name to your voice. I mean, who are your influences, and is that range natural for you?
Thank you, man. That's a compliment of the highest order. I guess I've always kind of had a big mouth, I guess. I guess the range, as far as like physically, it is demanding. I work out very, intensely almost every day on the road to try and, like, you know, hit those notes. But, you know, fortunately, my genetic makeup or something, whatever you want to call it, it allows me to get up into that range. And, I've recently just, you know, never had any voice lessons. Last year, while we were recording the album, I took two voice lessons with a guy named Roger Love. So I do a very regimented vocal warm up every day. But as far as like vocalists go, I'm a huge fan of Stone Temple Pilots, and I always loved what Scott Weiland would do in both the higher registers and the lower registers. And he had like this really cool, kind of sexy grit to his voice, you know, and
mm-hmm.
He's a big influence on me as far as like vocal styling goes. I learned how to sing, you know, many of their songs, you know, when I first started playing guitar, I were FCT songs, and then also on that same tip, I learned a lot of Alice in Chains songs, so I was singing a lot of the stuff that Lane Staley was doing. That means a lot to me that you think I have a very unique voice. That's a huge compliment, man.
No problem, man. You mentioned genetics before. Let's touch on that. Is it tough to be in a band with your brother?
It is or isn't, man. It's a double edged sword, man. It can be a very powerful tool. You know, my brother is he keeps me centered. He keeps me grounded. You know, he's much more responsible than I am, even though he's a younger brother. he helps me keep my feet on the ground. But at the same time, he also, you know, forces me to strive to be a better musician and just a better person all around. You know, he's 8 years younger than me, and he's a better man than I am. So I'm like, you know, it's weird in a way. I look up to my younger brother.
Considering that, what's the band's creative process like? Are you and your brother kind of like, you know, Gene Simmons and Peter Criss? Do you like kind of take over, or, you know, what's it like?
We're pretty open with the writing process. Usually, it'll start with my brother will have a riff, that he's just kind of noodling on the guitar. He's very prolific. He's always got ideas. Just he picks up a guitar and he's got a new riff, you know, just flying out of the tips of his fingers. Either I'll have a riff, or he'll have a riff, or I'll have like a melody, and then we're very fortunate in the sense that, you know, my brother is not only is he a classically trained guitar player, but the rest of the members, Corky, our drummer, went to Stanford for music performance and production. You know, so he's very well versed in music theory. Our bass player V went to MI, the Musicians Institute in LA.
Wow.
Our new guy, the rhythm guitar Andy Pugh, rhythm guitarist. They're all steeped in music theory. I'm really the only uneducated, you know, imbecile as far as that goes. So we've been lucky to surround ourselves with the right key players now. And whenever my brother and I had to start an idea, the guys are very, very adept at giving us direction. And like, well, if we can start apart, you know, they literally know the numbers and the math behind the music to say, well, try this because this works theoretically. And most of the time, it's like, wow, yeah, that sounds great. You know, there we go. Why didn't I think of that? You know.
Speaking of which,
everybody contributes. Yeah.
Speaking of which, Die For You, I mean, it has that great opening guitar riff. How did that song come together? Was it based on something, or was it just one of those things that came to you? I mean, how did it come to be?
Well, that's funny. That story is actually, this is before we even signed our deal, in the summer of 2011. We went out to Silver Lake, California, and to do a writing session with Scott Stevens, former lead singer of a band called The X's. Now he's a very accomplished songwriter and producer, and we went out there to his studio up in the hills, and we started writing that song. And my brother and Scott sat down and came up with the guitar part. And then that night, when, you know, after we kind of fleshed out the music, we're like, well, what's this song about? Well, that night, I went to bed, I woke up the next morning, and, you know, like an idiot, you know, I went on my Facebook, and I looked at my ex-girlfriend's Facebook profile, and there's all these pictures of her with some guy that the night before, you know, she went on a date with, right? And so that's where that lyric... You know, it was killing me, but I felt so alive because I hurt so deeply, you know, like, so that whole, you know, I feel so alive, I died for you, you know, I was trying to capture that, you know, this is such an intense feeling, you know, when you have that kind of overwhelming pain, like, that's when you feel the most alive, the most, you know, aware of being human.
Yeah, what do they say? It's better to love and lust to have never loved at all.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about that one. I don't know if I agree with that, but over the years, man, I guess, you know, yeah. So that's kind of the story behind that tune. You know, it was very organic, quote unquote, for lack of a better term. I was out there in the studio, you know, thinking about this girl and wanting to write a song for her, and she was back home in Vegas, you know, fucking around with some other guy, you know. So it was like, it was like very ironic, and bittersweet at the same time because, you know, a pretty solid song was born out of that pain, you know.
If you don't mind me asking, does she know now that song is about her?
Yeah, unfortunately. A lot of the songs on the album are inspired by, you know, what went down in that relationship. It was a strange time, dude. Like, 2011, I spent that whole year trying to reconcile with her. And then, towards the end of the year, on Halloween of 2011, Halloween night, my cousin passed away while he was riding Harley. And we were all really good friends, you know. It was like, my ex and my cousin were very close, and my cousin was very fond of me and her together as a couple. And that whole year I spent, you know, talking with him about trying to fix things with her and trying to get back with her and, you know, just trying to make things right. And so the two tragedies, the death of that relationship and the death of my cousin, are, like, intertwined, unfortunately. You know, it's very, it runs really deep with me, and a lot of the songs on True Love Never Dies, you know, kind of reflect that.
Can the same thing be said for Don't Be Afraid? Is that kind of like riled up in that whole experience as well?
Yeah, you know, the lyrics for that, you know, it was inspired not only by what I was going through, but we were also, you know, my brother and I were trying to, we look at our mom and dad as a very unique example of true love, you know, and our dad called our mom Girl. That's his nickname for her, Girl, you know, they always called it, hey girl, girl, you know, like, it's really cute, it's very endearing, and no matter what, when they're fighting, or if they're happy, or if they're angry, they're like, he always calls it Girl, and so I took some of the emotion that I was dealing with, and then I imagined what it would be like if my dad were to sing a song to my mom, and that's where Don't Be Afraid came from. And you know, I was singing to this girl too at the same time, like saying, you know, look, we can make it through this, you know, and look at my folks, you know, they immigrated to this country and made it through, you know, God knows how, you know what, you know, like some of the most horrendous experiences that of the human condition. And they made it through. So I was trying to sing to her and show her that example as well. And that's kind of the basis of that song in particular.
Okay, you've told us some of your influences. We've kind of got like this really like rounded impression of your personality. So now let's have like a little bit of fun. Tell me something that's on your iPod, a song on your iPod that you're ashamed of, but you love anyway.
Dude, my favorite band of all time is Third Eye Blind. You know, people knock that band, you know, but dude, the lyrical, Stephen Jenkins' lyrical content, the guy's a poet. Those albums, man, you know, as quote-unquote poppy as they might get, you know, pigeonholed as being, they're also rocking albums, you know. There's some great songwriting and musicianship and just really like a soundtrack to my life, you know, like, That band got me through, you know, my earliest heartaches, my heartbreaks, and all that. You know, that jazz back in high school. So yep. that's one that I'm, you know, I tell people Third Eye Blind, they're kind of like, really? And they kind of like, you know, give me this funny look. Another one that I've been listening to a lot lately is M83, and they're not exactly, you know, you a rock band or a rock act. You wouldn't expect rockers to be listening to that, I suppose, but I listen to a lot of M83 nowadays as well, so.
All right.
I love Tech Mind, too. Tech Mind's pretty good.
Nice. Awesome, man. I'm looking at the card for the Fort Rock Music Festival, and I mean, come on, Volbeat, The Offspring, Device, you got some high-powered groups there. How does it feel to be a part of all of that?
Man, you know, it's like, it's crazy, dude, when we see our name on the bill with bands of that caliber, you know, it's, you know, when we look at the flyers and we look at the, you know, the posters, it's like, wow, man, this is, you know, again, that's really happening, you know, we're really playing with these guys, you know, and it's, you know, I mean, those shows like that, festivals like that, you know, just prove that, you know, that rock and roll still matters, it's still important. You know, even though it has kind of gone underground again in a certain respect, it's not as mainstream as it once was. But if you go to shows like that, you can, you know, the energy, the vibe, the lifestyle is totally palpable. You know, you can feel it in the air. And man, just to be even, to have the opportunity to play on a platform like that is just, man, it's a great honor.
Speaking of energy, I mean, listening to your music, and it's like, you know, Monster Energy Drink, you know, sponsors you guys, and it's like, it's fitting, you know, because you guys are like this big, you know, burst of energy, but how do you guys differentiate from the studio to the live performance? How are your live performances different?
Well, with this album, we actually tried to emulate the sound on the album live as much as possible. You know, in our case, with True Love Never Dies, it was really like throw and go, man. I mean, we did the album at NRG Studios with you know, the legendary Jay Baumgartner, and we did the album in 5 weeks. and in those 5 weeks, we were driving home to Vegas, between LA and Vegas, to play shows on the weekend to make money so we could hit the road. And we actually had a show at the Roxy at the very last end of the very last week of recording. And Jay was like, you know, I've never seen a band do an album like this. It's not normally how they're done. And so the album does have some very raw aspects to it. And we try to capture that as much as possible live. So we actually went out and we bought all the amps and the guitars that were used in the recording process to try and stay it true to life, to the sound that you hear on the album. So as far as like sonically, you know, we try to capture that, but the vibe between the studio and the live show, man, you know, when you're in the studio, I love being in the studio because you have all this freedom to do, you know, just be creative and, you know, just try different ideas. Live, it's, you know, people expect to hear a song a certain way, and, you know, we try to give it to them as, you know, like I said, as true to form as possible.
Okay, what do you think you learned during those 5 weeks of recording, and how do you think it'll influence your work moving forward?
We definitely learned that we would like to have a little bit more pre-production time next time we do an album. We literally had one day with Jay Baumgartner to go through the demos and, you know, decide what's good and what maybe we should skip. And it taught us that, you know, what it gave us was it taught us confidence because it was so rushed and so, you know, we were like really slingshotted into the national scene and touring. But it gave us confidence and taught us that we need to believe in ourselves because we're apparently able to write strong enough songs, you know, to make it onto a professional album. You know, it's really, sometimes it's hard to, you know, kind of, I guess, compliment yourself, I suppose, but that recording process, you know, really instilled confidence in us and self-affirmation.